It's great to be with you and to be able to share some very good news today. I hope you find it as exciting as I do. But first, I wanted to say thank you to you for your patience over these months of chaos that we've been enduring and the transition that we've made to pushing so many ministries online. Thank you for bearing with us. The good news is we're very close to being able to relaunch public in-person services again. Our sanitization system is in place, and we've got it working to the extent we can get these big rooms cleaned very quickly. You'll notice we have plexiglass everywhere to protect people. Our seating plan and people flow system is ready to be tested out. Our registration and touchless check-in system is in place. The last thing we really need to just figure out is getting the video and audio reset for both in-person and online so that we can do everything together. So thank you for being patient during all of these transitions. The good news is that we are planning to relaunch public worship services at both physical campuses, Deerfoot and Southwest, on the weekend of September 12 and 13. For those of you who choose to come to the Deerfoot campus, we will have the service on Saturday evening the 12th at 6:30 p.m. as normal, and again on Sunday morning at 9:15 and 11:15. And those of you who are part of our Southwest campus, that one service will take place on Sunday the 13th at 11:15 in the morning. Our online campus will continue the way that you've been used to over these months, and we'll be broadcasting on our Facebook page, will be broadcasting on YouTube and also on our website, and you're certainly welcome to be part of any of those gatherings too. We've really done everything possible that we can imagine to comply with all of the health regulations, and simply want to say to you, we'll be ready whenever you're ready, and you can make a decision about what will be best for you and your family and your loved ones, whether it's to be in a physical campus or to remain in the online campus, but we're going to be doing everything we can to serve you and your family to the best of our ability. Things will be a little different, though, if you do come to one of the physical campuses. You'll know that we have to practice physical distancing, and so our seating system has been redefined, and there are different places, and we've made sure there's adequate space between family groups or bubble groups so that you can sit with those closest to you and be well protected from those round about you. Masks, of course, are now mandatory if you're going to be in the facilities. And that also means there'll be no congregational singing. Music will still be a large part of our services, and we've also been developing some new and innovative ways for you to be able to participate. It won't just be spectator sport, and I think you're going to be delighted at the opportunities that we'll have for you. One little bit of a challenge, but also an opportunity at the start, is that children are going to have to remain with you. We're not able to launch Discovery Land right away. That's going to take a little more time, though we will have activity sheets prepared, and if you come organized, we'd be delighted to have your children as part of our weekend services. Some ways that you can help. Let me just tell you about that real quickly. If you haven't yet signed up for our weekly newsletter, I'd encourage you to do so, and you can do that right on the main page, the home page of our website. It's a great way for you to get the latest information, and you'll also receive in the newsletter the links so that you can pre-register to come to a service. We are going to be taking pre-registrations because numbers will be limited. And if you could do that once the registration page is open, that will be a big help for us as we plan what's going to happen next. The next big thing I'd really ask of you is once you've picked a service, try to get here early. We smile at that because I know all of us, me included at times, stroll in at all sorts of times. But in order for this to work with our touchless entry system, we really need you to pretend you're going to your daughter's wedding. Get there early, not just on time, but early so we can register you in and get you guided to the appropriate seating to make sure everything works. Be great if you could bring your own mask with you, but we will have some available in case you forget so that you and your family are protected. The last thing really to let you know is we still have lots of spaces for volunteers. There are all sorts of new volunteer roles emerging as we begin to transition. And if you would like to volunteer on the homepage, you can click the I Can Serve button and someone will be in touch with you. And I know some of our seniors have been wondering about the fact that some of our high touch roles have to be for those under 60. I just about make it. But we do have other roles for people to take part in. So if you click I Can Serve, we will be in touch with you shortly to let you know how you can best serve the wider community as we reform and relaunch for in-person services and physical campuses. But today we're still wondering. The question we're really wondering about is, does God heal today? Maybe you've never wondered about it, or maybe you have. Could God intervene in my life? Have you ever wondered about that? We're going to look at another question Jesus has been asking. And the question today is simply this: what do you want me to do for you? Have you ever wondered what you'd say to Jesus if he asked you that question? Let me read the story. It takes place in Mark chapter 10, and we're going to begin at verse 46. Here's what we read. Then they came to Jericho, and as Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him, told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. What do you want me to do for you? It's a penetrating question. Imagine the situation of this blind man sitting at the side of the road. He's not just blind as a result of his blindness. He's unemployed. He's homeless. He's a beggar. He's poor. He's destitute. He's just trying to survive. And Jesus and a crowd of other people are wandering along the road. Jesus has been up north in a place called Galilee, a rural area, small towns, farms, people like living in Saskatchewan, that sort of thing. He's talking to them and wandering down to Jerusalem, his final journey to Jerusalem, because Jesus is on the way to the cross. And it's during the great Jewish festival, the Feast of Passover. There are literally thousands of pilgrims making the same journey, passing through Jericho on their way to Jerusalem. It's a momentous holiday. The roads are filled. Everybody's out having a great time. People would often stop in Jericho, the last stop, to get somewhere to sleep perhaps, or a meal to refresh their food and water supplies, other necessities. And as Jesus comes along, there are all sorts of poor people I could imagine at the side of the road. It's a strategic point with lots of tourists, lots of religious pilgrims. It would be a great opportunity to see if they might help you make your way through the struggles of your life. It was probably the best day, the best time to hope that somebody would give you something. And he shouts out, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." People tell him to be quiet. Jesus is busy. But he just yells all the louder, "Son of David, have mercy on me." There's lots of people on this road, probably thousands of people. It's quite remarkable that he knows Jesus is there. It's even more remarkable that Jesus actually hears this one voice among the din, the crowd, the throng that are there. I guess perhaps it's like a mother who can hear the cry of her child over the noise of all the other toddlers in the room. But Jesus cries out to him, "Come, bring him to me." And despite it all, something miraculous happens. And Jesus asks him, "What do you want me to do for you?" Have you figured out how you might answer that question if you encountered Jesus and he asked you the same words? What do you want me to do for you? "Lord, I want to see," he answered. There's a bunch of things stood out to me as I was rereading this passage this week. Here's some of them. The guy knows that he needs help. He can't heal himself. He can't make himself see. There's no surgery available in his time and place. It's not like going to the doctor's going to make any difference. He can't find a job. He's stuck. He has no possibilities. And I think that's the difference between him and me. I often think I can fix things by myself. I can take charge and fix what's wrong. I can get my own life sorted out, thank you very much. And so I try to make it on my own. But he knows he needs help. Here's something else. He's come to understand healing doesn't always come easy. He had to push through the opposition of the crowd, people telling him to be quiet and mind his own business. There are always voices telling us Jesus doesn't have time for us. He doesn't care about you. He's not interested. He's too busy for you. Maybe you tell yourself that. And you come to think, God has no time for me. He's got more important things to do than listen to my prayer. Or maybe, just maybe, you could find a way to push through that discouragement. Here's something else. He was persistent. Regardless of what anybody was saying, he was persistent. He didn't give up trying. He kept yelling at Jesus. He kept going and going until Jesus listened to him. That seems weird to me. I'm much more inclined just to ask Jesus something, and if he doesn't say anything back, we'll let it be. Thanks very much for giving me a moment of your time. I'm not doing that sort of thing, trying to keep shouting at Jesus to get his attention, but this guy does. He's persistent. He doesn't give up. Look at this. He knows that Jesus owes him nothing. He's not demanding. He's not yelling, demanding something from Jesus. It's not about his rights. It's not even about him trying to make a deal with Jesus. You do this for me, I'll do this for you in return. Instead, he just simply says, mercy. Have mercy on me. He puts himself out there and waits to see what might happen. He asks for mercy. And he takes a chance. I mean, he literally jumps at the chance in verse 50. He jumps to his feet and he runs over to where Jesus is. He doesn't wait for Jesus to come to him. He makes the first move and dashes all the way towards Jesus. No hesitation, no waiting for a better time. Maybe we could put it like this: no waiting for in-person services. No waiting till I've a few more people to help me. No waiting, perhaps, till I've got my life more in order. No. No waiting till I've got the courage. He just simply dashes towards Jesus. He takes a chance. And he's specific. I want to see. That's the answer to the question. I want to see. It's a straightforward request. There's no big explanation about how he lost his sight. There's no conversation about how this has affected his life or his opportunities or what might be different if he could see again. He just simply says, I want to see. He's straightforward and to the point. And I noticed this too. His faith is in Jesus. We all have faith to some extent. It's the object of our faith that I think truly matters here, who we place our trust in. And this guy has figured out where he's placing his trust. He's placing his trust wholeheartedly in Jesus. And then I noticed this. He follows Jesus. He doesn't just say, thank you for the gift of restored sight. He doesn't pat Jesus on the back and say, don't worry, I've got this. He doesn't tell him how blessed he is. He's not explaining what his life is going to be like because God has done something for him. He doesn't do any of that. He just follows Jesus immediately. And where is Jesus going? He's going to Jerusalem. He's going to the cross. And this blind man chooses to follow. He takes following seriously. He's come to understand that being a disciple of Jesus means following Jesus. It means picking up and carrying our own cross. And immediately he follows Jesus. He's all in. And get this. He sees Jesus for who he really is. That's why he asked for help. That's why he followed. He understands who Jesus truly is, the promised Son of David, the Messiah, the Savior, the Redeemer, his healer. Now, that may not seem too difficult to get. I mean, it seems fairly obvious if he was talking to Jesus. But actually, if you read back in Mark chapter 10, just a few verses, you'll discover it's not obvious at all. It really isn't. Jesus has already asked this very same question to somebody else. Look with me at verse 35 of Mark chapter 10. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, We want you to do for us whatever we ask. What do you want me to do for you? He asked. Same question. They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said. James and John, followers of Jesus, 3 years of following Jesus. They're in the crowd of 12 disciples. They're always listed there. In fact, they're in the inner circle of three, Peter, James, and John. They're Jesus' best friends. What do you want me to do for you? He asked them. And what did they want? They wanted to be in the right and on the left. When people looked up at Jesus, they'd look up at them too. They wanted to be famous. They wanted to be in charge. They wanted power and prestige and glory. It turns out they couldn't see Jesus for who he really was. You see, Bartimaeus may have been physically blind, but he had spiritual insight. And recognizing Jesus for who he truly was, he placed his faith, his trust, his allegiance in Jesus. And maybe that's where some of us need to begin today, placing our trust, our faith, our allegiance in Jesus. Maybe that's where we start, when we begin to see Jesus for who he really is, the one who came to be our rescue, the one who came to restore us, the one who forgives and makes us new, the one who is our healer, the one who invites us on the difficult path of cross-bearing with him. Most weeks in our Wondering series, we've been sharing a story with you. And this weekend, it's my turn to tell you a little bit of my story.
Hi, James.
We're hiding behind a big screen from each other. This is kind of weird.
I know. It's not like we don't know each other. just in case anybody doesn't know me, my name is Heather Weil, and I interview most of the people for the story videos that you see throughout the year here at FAC, and so thanks for letting me interview you today.
Thank you. Thanks for doing it.
So you and Jillian have been at FAC back in Calgary for about 5 years, a little
yeah,
over 5 years.
Yeah, just over 5 years.
You have definitely had some health challenges, have you not?
I was fit and healthy till I came here to join the team and become pastor here. My life's been ruined ever since. You guys have made me sick.
Well, you had a pacemaker put in, oh, I don't know, 3 years ago?
Yeah,
and then since
four.
Then... Four. Mm-hmm. And then since then, you've developed quite a tremor, and probably people have noticed a little bit, but why don't you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, well, the pacemaker thing was exciting in its own right, but that's long gone. My battery's still working. I'm good. But a few years ago, I started noticing a tremor in my left hand a little bit. I noticed it most when I actually get up in the morning, and I was putting the ties on the curtains, and I was shaking a little bit trying to do it, and wondering, this just becoming middle-aged man. Middle-aged men do this sort of thing, and for a long time, I threw it off and paid no attention to it. But eventually it was getting challenging. It was getting harder for me here when I was speaking in public. Some of you would have seen me trembling a little bit. And I ended up going to my family doctor, and he thought it was being a middle-aged man too, and gave me some pills to try and help that really weren't helping very much. And things just kept deteriorating month on month.
It was pretty scary.
It was for a long time. You would have noticed me on stage trying to hold my hand behind my back, struggling. We got the new podium that would help. There were a number of things, but it was becoming obvious there was something seriously wrong.
So you had a fascinating dream along the way.
Yeah.
And a few people know about that, but why don't you tell the rest of us?
So there was one, I usually dream about being a spy or a superhero. I'm fairly childish, really, but one night I had a dream about Jesus, and that's quite unusual for me. And in this dream, I was with Jesus, and he was in another healing incident, actually two chapters earlier in Mark chapter 8, if anybody wants to read it. And Jesus is with a guy, and he touches him, and the man says, oh, I can see people, but they look like trees walking about. And so Jesus touches him again, and he can see perfectly. And I was really feeling quite uncomfortable, and Jesus turned around and asked me, what's wrong, man? And I told him, when I was a younger pastor, I preached a sermon which I thought was a cute title, and it said, Jesus fails with a question mark, because it took two attempts. And I said, I'm sorry, Lord. I was really freaked out Jesus was going to be angry with me. And he burst out laughing, slapped me in the back, and goes, it's fine, nobody cares. And I'm like, whew, escaped this one. And then he turned and looked at me, and he said, I'll heal you too, but it will take two touches. And instantly I woke up, like wide awake, this vivid dream in my mind. I woke Gillian up to tell her. I was on the phone quickly to tell my kids. It was the most unusual experience, this sort of dream. And yeah, it quite a dramatic moment in a way that I'd never experienced
Definitely.
Before.
I love it when God speaks like that and you just know, you know that it was him. So have you experienced either one of those touches in your life?
Well, at the time, I was taking medication that was increasingly, as the dose was going up, having a lot of side effects for me. Some of you have probably seen me. I was suffering from anxiety. Depression was beginning to set in. I had frequent nosebleeds. My GI system was all over the place. Often, right before I'd come up to preach, my nose would be bleeding. I was just praying it wouldn't before I'd get on stage. I was feeling really ill and definitely not myself. It was a troubling time for me. And at the time that first touch thing happened, our pastors have a prayer retreat every year. You were there. We went on this prayer retreat. And I think I told some of you about the dream, but not many. But you all gathered around and prayed for a very long time for me. And that day when you prayed, all of those symptoms stopped instantly. Mm-hmm. No more nausea, no more vomiting, no more nosebleeds, the anxiety. Everything went away almost instantly that day. I'd never felt so good in such a long time. And I'd gone to bed sort of praising Jesus for one good day, and the next day was a good day, and I thought, wow, there's number one. This is going to be fantastic. When does number two happen? I was so excited about this that all these symptoms had disappeared. The shaking was still there, but everything else had gone.
So step one, yay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Step two.
What about step two?
Well, by then I'd been referred to a neurologist, so I'd gone off to my appointment, and I was thinking, well, maybe step two, God will miraculously heal me, or maybe step two is she'll give me a bottle of pills, and I'll go home, and it'll be fantastic. That's really what I was hoping for. And so I went in that day to see my neurologist, and they did a bunch of tests and a bunch of other things, and that day didn't go so well. In fact, you were the first person I think I met when I came back to work from being there. Jill was away out of the country at the time. And she told me it was a whole lot more serious than that. All of the signs, the early diagnosis, were pointing to a condition that was going to be much more troubling and significant for me. As far as you could tell, it would be something that wouldn't be treatable, and it would actually considerably shorten my life, and she gave me a time horizon for it. And this is what I didn't expect number two to be, that I'd be healed going to heaven. It just felt like my world was beginning to fall apart.
It got darker before it got better, hey?
It really got very complicated. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She'd sent me for an MRI. That was going to be the next step because that would confirm what was going on. It would show that there was some deterioration in my brain structure. Mm-hmm. So getting the MRI was fun. Because of the tremor, I had to be physically restrained. So it looked like something out of a bad movie with all these leather straps tying me down onto going to the machine. A couple of weeks later, I went for the results. Fairly terrified, to be honest, as you might imagine. It's been hard for our kids, my wife telling them this. Mm-hmm. And so going for the results was a fairly traumatic day for me. And she played the video multiple times and found nothing going wrong in my head, which was a great thing.
Yeah.
It's funny to say there's nothing in my head, but at the same time then, they didn't really know what to do. So she began different treatments, different protocols of medicine. I ended up taking a cocktail of drugs that she said probably won't work, but there's no harm in it. And I've been taking those for quite some time now, and they actually have helped me considerably. Mm-hmm. The tremor's not disappeared. When I'm off meds, I feel it. But it has significantly brought it under control. Mm-hmm. My quality of life has returned mostly to what it was, and I can function fairly well. You'll still see me shake a little bit on stage. I still use the podium to steady my hand. But I've got a whole lot more ahead of me than behind me right now, and I feel very encouraged by the way the meds have helped me, for her insight, her patience to not give up on me. And most of all, for God, for giving me the courage to press on.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask you that. The man in Mark 10, he's persistent. And do you find yourself being persistent in that pursuit of complete healing?
It is. I mean, I'm grateful for what it is. I can drive my car again. For a long time, I wasn't doing that. I couldn't handwrite. I couldn't type. Some of you would know that. I had dictation software. There were a lot of challenges. Many of those things with the rehab center I've been to, I've been able to learn how to do again. I've been very grateful to my physiotherapist and occupational therapist. A lot of things that were really hard for me, I can do now. I can walk without tripping or falling. I can write sort of legibly. I can type again. There's a lot of great things have happened. The meds have very few side effects that they don't do what other things have done to me. And they're helping a lot. When I wake up in the morning, it's difficult. If I wake up during the night, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the time, I do well. Mm-hmm. And it's reminded me of a couple of things. One, that God works in all sorts of ways. Mm-hmm. And in my journey with this, part of it was a very miraculous, instantaneous change. And part of it through taking medicine, and medicine comes from things that he gave us in this world in the first place, and he gives the doctors the skills. But part of it also has been a measure of courage to face reality that could have been very hard, or it might be a whole lot better, and nobody knows the answer to that. But my hope is in him, and I've learned, I think, on the part of that journey that the healing wasn't just from physical stuff, as though he could stop me shaking, because he can and he has done. Healing was also taking place in my heart, my mind, my emotions about what my life would be, and to recognize that I am surrounded by family and friends that love me, that I'm part of this community that cares for me, and to realize that with God, all sorts of things are possible. So I've learned a ton through all of this. It's not something I'd recommend. I kind of wish it was a little different. But at the same time, I've discovered far more of Jesus than I think I ever would have in any other way.
James, it's having worked with you so closely for the 5 years that you've been in Calgary, and watching that tremor arrive and now subside, and also see you completely surrender your life, whatever the outcome, has been really inspiring. And it's, I'm so grateful to God that he is, you know, managing that tremor for you. And we'll continue to pray for you in that, in this time, and complete healing. And I also just want to thank you for being a leader that is willing to be transparent and share some of your, you know, inner struggles and challenges, because that just, that helps the rest of us do life. And so I really appreciate you sharing that with us. Thank you, James.
Thank you, Heather. Thanks for being my friend and being there for me when I needed people to surround me most of all. I appreciate that. It's been a complicated journey, and one that may not easily go away, but is a journey with Jesus. And what I've learned, maybe some of you have too, is healing takes all sorts of forms. It can be instantaneous. It could be over a longer time period. It could be the seemingly miraculous, or it could be the equally miraculous gift of medicine and of physicians to come alongside. It could be restored physical health, or it could be freedom in spirit and the courage to face your tomorrows with Jesus. I don't know about you, but I know this much. I know I need Jesus. And in so many ways, I've had to learn that the hard way. And I'm still learning from this blind man. I know I need help. I can't actually fix myself. I know it's not always easy. And I need to be persistent. I know Jesus doesn't owe me anything, but he is asking me the question, what do you want me to do for you? I know I should jump at the opportunities that Jesus gives me. I know that I need to be specific in my prayer and tell him what I want. I want to stop shaking. I want to be able to walk without falling. I know I need to place my trust in Jesus. I know following Jesus matters. I know who Jesus is. He's my Savior, and he's my healer. So when Jesus asks you the question, what do you want me to do for you? Do you have an answer? Do you know what you would say? Or are you still wondering? We have a unique opportunity for you. In the screen in a moment or two, you're going to find instructions on how to enter a Zoom room. You'll need a new tab open on your computer, or you'll need the Zoom software to do that with. Members of our prayer team or elders or pastors will be there. And you can be placed into a private room where you have an opportunity to express your prayer request. And we would love to pray with you and to pray for you that God truly would be your healer today. It's a little different. We all get that. But it is an opportunity. It could be healing that you want to be prayed for. It could be something else. That's okay. We would love to pray with you and to pray for you today. If the technology is a little slow or you need to wait to get on board, please be patient with us. We're as new to this as you are. Normally, we invite people to come to the front for prayer. We love to gather and pray. But we don't want to miss the opportunity, even if we have to use computer screens. And so you should find the meeting ID code and the password there. You can go there right now, and someone will be with you in a moment or two. Because here's what I want you to remember most of all. Just as Jesus was passing through Jericho that day, he's passing by here today. And he's waiting for you. And he's calling to you. What do you want me to do for you?